You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Eddie Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
It is 2025 in the year of our Lord, and in 2026, it will be time for another LCMS convention, which means it is time to get conventional. We're going to talk with Dr. Sias today, looking forward to the LCMS convention taking place in the summer of 2026. Thanks to Concordia University, Wisconsin for supporting the Coffee Hour. Find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin at cuw.edu.
Live uncommon.
Joining us today, the Reverend Dr. John Sias. He is Secretary of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and our expert on all things conventional. Dr. Sias, welcome back to the Coffee Hour.
It's good to be back with you.
We are looking ahead to the LCMS convention taking place in 2026, which means the last convention, I believe, took place in 2023. Where does that leave us in the convention cycle? If the last convention took place in 2023, are we still following up on things from that convention and then looking forward to the next convention?
We are indeed. There are a number of task forces and projects that are still ongoing. And we're also in that middle year of the convention cycle. We have a convention. We kind of take a year off to recover and to work on things immediately thereafter, let officers get settled in their positions. And then the second year, the middle year, is full of district conventions. And those are already off to a rip-roaring start with three of them. The third actually currently underway.
So tell us more about that, the flow of what happens between conventions. I know this year will be full of district conventions. What is the regular rhythm of the convention cycle? What does that look like?
Well, for me, the convention, immediately after the convention, everybody goes home and relaxes, and I write the proceedings and get that out to the Synod to inform everyone what the convention has done and decided. And hopefully folks interact with that. Congregations have a chance to digest the resolutions that have been adopted and have a look at the direction that they've set for the convention. So that's, you know, really kind of the first part. And then all the task forces and activities that the convention has spun up get going. The district convention part of the cycle is an important piece. The districts get together to govern themselves. The congregations elect their officers for their district-level offices and also set the direction of their districts and tee up ideas for the coming synod convention. So there's really not much time where there's not convention-oriented activity going on somewhere in the Synod. Kind of hard to imagine how we used to do this on a two-year cycle back in the 70s and 80s, having a Synod convention, district convention in alternating years back-to-back.
Did we have 35 districts at that time? Do we have as many districts?
There were on the order of that many. I don't recall exactly how many, but yeah, similar.
So the district conventions already go, as you mentioned, some are already underway, some have already happened. It seems like many of them that have already happened are in the northern parts, northern territories, northern states.
It's kind of interesting how that happens. You know, it traditionally, North Dakota was always the first and always did it in January, possibly because there's nothing else to do in North Dakota in January except get together and have a convention and hope the heat is on, which it kind of wasn't this time. But yeah, they had some issues at the facility, but I saw reports of a very chilly convention floor the one day, but the SELC district, one of our non-geographical districts, actually kind of scooped North Dakota this year, and they held theirs just before in January, but they did it in Florida. So, you know, so wise choice there. And South Dakota is currently ongoing. So I don't know what it is with the Dakotas, but they like to get it done. Convention-eager folks, I guess.
Get into the year, get started, get it done so they can get on with the action items that come from convention, I would gather.
There you go.
So tell us a little bit more about what happens at the district convention and how that connects then to what happens at the synodical convention.
Well, both the district and the synod conventions are the primary governing bodies of those pieces of the synod. The districts govern just what's going on within that particular district. They elect the officers for that district, the members of the board of directors and other boards and commissions that the district might have. They evaluate the reports from the previous triennium of the district president and the circuit visitors and board of directors and other activities in the district, and then set direction for the district for the next 3 years. They might adopt new mission goals. They might set forth particular projects the district is working on, establish or change, you know, things like campus ministries or deaf ministry, blind ministry, other things that a district might engage in as a whole. And then they can also, as I said, tee up ideas for the Synod Convention. There are often concerns that are kind of seen first in one part of the Synod or another. Some parts of our Synod are stretched pretty thin for finding pastors, especially where housing values are high. And so those districts have a higher vacancy rate than the rest of us and are more concerned about encouraging Synod to do something to fill those pulpits and help those people out. So just one example of ideas that are of initially kind of local interest or heightened concern that can bubble up and become significant issues for the convention as a whole, Synod convention as a whole to deal with.
What happens then between district conventions and, well, I should back up a step. Do district conventions then last for the entirety of this year for 2025, or do some of them go over into 26? How does that timing work?
They can, in theory, be stretched throughout the whole year. And we get off to a bang in January with them. The last of them typically occurs, and this year is no exception, in July. Because if you push your district convention back too far, one of the things the district convention has to do is to set forth the circuits that will be represented by delegates at the Synod Convention. And those delegates have to be reported to me by October this year so that we can get them all lined up to come into the convention. Well, if your district convention is too late, there can be some uncertainty and real pressure to getting that done. So that's one of the factors that causes it to be compressed a little bit earlier. The bulk of them happen in June and then July. And June is a month of, you can almost walk through the calendar from one district convention to another, and sometimes standing on three or four at a time without hitting an empty day.
So what I'm hearing you say is that if you really want to like travel the country, you can just kind of district convention up throughout the first part of the year and get all of the good details about every district.
You could see it all. Yes. you couldn't see it all in every place, but you could at least stop in each one, you know.
So then what else happens between the district conventions and the synodical convention? How does the rest of that timeline work out?
Right. So one thing that's already ongoing and people can actually already participate in is the nomination process for positions that are nominated for the Committee on Convention Nominations, including the secretary, board of directors, the boards and commissions of the Synod that are elected, including all the boards of regents and boards for synod-wide corporate entities that have elected membership. That's already opened up, and anybody can go, any member of any LCMS congregation can go to lcms.org/nominate and find a new electronic system they can use there to make those nominations. So that's already going. The other big piece that is already open is the submission of overtures to the Synod Convention. Those are pieces of work that people, either congregations, circuits, district conferences, district conventions, and some of the boards can send up ideas of what they want the Synod and Convention to do. And those things will be accepted into next year until the end of February. But we're welcoming them already.
Has the Office of the Secretary put together a piece similar to Schoolhouse Rocks with the life cycle of an overture?
We can't take credit for that in the Office of the Secretary, but we do have the how an overture becomes a resolution that comms put together a few years ago. That's up on the website too, if you want to print that out and show your kids.
I think we're gonna have to link to that today.
Yeah.
Yes.
That and a whole wealth of information are available. The main kind of convention page hasn't yet been updated for the upcoming convention. Mm-hmm. But the underlying information, how to do everything and what's happening, that's all available and updated at lcms.org/convention/governance. That section talks about how the congregations govern their Synod and Convention. There's a ton of stuff there for convention junkies and newbies alike.
So at this point, district conventions are underway. What's the timeline then for the Synod Convention? As we're start making plans for that. I know plans are still in place and we haven't necessarily published the dates and things like that. We know that it's going to be in Arizona this time, correct?
It is in Phoenix. It will be in July. The opening service and open hearings and all that good stuff are on Saturday, the 18th of July, 2026. And then it runs through noon as usual on Thursday, the 23rd. So we've got a little time. And I don't know a lot about local arrangements, but I know it will be a warm welcome in July in Phoenix. Bring your baggies and steaks and you can have sous vide on the sidewalk at lunchtime.
But it's great. A dry heat, right? It's a dry heat.
Dry heat. Dry heat. Yes.
Sure.
We are looking forward to the next LCMS convention, talking about where we are in the LCMS convention cycle with the Reverend Dr. John Sias today, Secretary of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment right here on the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
At Concordia University, Wisconsin, we believe you were created for a reason, to use your God-given gifts to help others, to live a life of self-sacrifice in a me-first world, to live a life that's uncommon. Whether you're taking one of 50-plus online programs or learning with us in person on the shores of Lake Michigan, you'll be equipped to make an uncommon impact. Learn more at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Live uncommon.
Welcome back to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are looking at the convention cycle for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Our guest today, the Reverend Dr. John Sias, he's Secretary of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And we're talking about where we are in the convention cycle. So right now we are in the middle of district conventions or near the beginning of the district convention cycle. And then a few have already happened. Some are underway and some will happen throughout the year all the way into June, preparing for the LCMS Synod Convention, which takes place next July, 2026. And so what are the next steps then in preparation for that now that district conventions are underway? We talked a little bit about overtures as well and elections, all that, much of that happening online. Tell us a little bit more about the resources that we'll use to prepare for convention, to submit nominations, elections, and overtures.
Right. So there's a whole host of publications that come out before the convention for delegates and other folks in the Synod, congregations, and interested people in congregations to have a look at and provide input to the convention. Those things are all still a ways off because we're still gathering the material that will go into them. The nominations for all those officer, board, and commission positions I mentioned, those are being accepted through lcms.org/nominate. And we've already published the what's called the 18-month mailing or notice that lists all the offices that are up for election, except for the president and a vice president. Those are handled separately by a process that'll start later in October. But everything else is up there. There's a downloadable PDF and a web page that'll show you what each of the offices do, who is incumbent in those offices, which folks are eligible to run for reelection, and what the qualifications are for the different positions. And I'll just put in a plug for that today because the Committee for Convention Nominations will meet in January of 2026. These are folks that are drawn from half of the Synod's districts at a time, so it's 17 or 18 members, half pastors or teachers, other commission workers, and half lay people from each of the districts. And they gather and look at all this mess of nomination material that I've gathered for them and try to find qualified folks, churchly folks, to fill all these many positions that are up for election. So they really rely on folks in the pews of the Synod getting into this nomination process and thinking about, hey, you know, we've got a guy, we've got a gal in the congregation that maybe has some background that would be useful for managing a church extension program with some banking or investment experience, or someone that has a lot of theological depth for a lay person. It would be helpful to clarifying Synod's positions on the CTCR, or someone who'd be good on a governing board of regents of a university or a seminary that's got some higher ed experience or legal experience or practice handling a large and complex organization from human resources, something like that. So if folks can get into that material and kind of match it up to people they know, it's really helpful to that committee to get that material in. So that's ongoing now. The other piece are the overtures that folks can be thinking about, again, from congregations, circuit forums, pastors or teachers conferences, district conventions. All those, along with boards of our agencies, can send up overtures, proposals of any great idea of something that synods should be doing or doing differently, or should study how our doctrine applies or is being understood in the modern context. All that is fodder for overtures that will give the delegates some good stuff to chew on when they get there in Phoenix. So that stuff's all available right now.
And we do want the delegates to have some good stuff to chew on. That's a good thing, convention.
We do. I want that workbook that goes out in the spring of 26 with all the nomination material, with all the overtures, all the reports from the officers, boards, commissions, and whatever, to be chock full of everything that the Synod needs to be thinking about for the coming 3 years, because that book's going to set the boundaries of what the convention is going to look at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is really important stuff. I was going to ask you why it's important, but you just explained the importance of all of these people. What are some questions, some things that people in congregations can be bringing up in their board of directors or church council meetings, things that they can be asking their pastors about if they're interested in being involved or want to have a say in this, but don't really know what kind of things they should be thinking about? How can people in congregations be talking about this?
Sure. So there are any number of things that are timely. One is that I'll talk about the delegate representation at the Synod. So the voting delegates come from our congregations. The congregations get together in groups of nominally 7 to 20 congregations and 1,500 confirmed members to 10,000. So you kind of get big congregations make little circuits and little congregations make big circuits, and elect a pastoral delegate and a lay delegate to the convention, as well as a couple alternates in case those folks can't, for whatever reason, make it. And the shrinkage in the number of confirmed members, especially in the Synod, has made some of those circuits that we're used to ineligible over time. And so districts are having to look at how we realign and represent the congregations, which is also kind of tied to how circuit visitors work with them in the non-convention times. You know, that circuit is supposed to get together and congregations and pastors support each other. So those boundaries are kind of up for discussion, in particular this cycle. There's a task force working on that. So if folks have input in how they're to be represented, that'd be a great topic to take to the district convention and to think about how we're going to change that system at the Synod. That will be a topic in 26. The other thing folks can do is to seek nomination as a lay delegate or pastoral delegate to be elected by their circuit forum to actually go to the convention in Phoenix in 26, which is an exciting thing. Other topics, you know, the supply of pastors I mentioned, you know, for congregations that are vacant, helping congregations get together in multi-congregation parishes or other arrangements to support each other when things get thin. Our universities were a big topic last time and probably will continue to receive some attention as they continue to do good things in a challenging environment. And then, you know, the broader questions of training pastors, qualification of pastors, and also other church workers, the shortage of teachers, shortage of principals, other commissioned areas. All those things are topics that I'd expect to kind of see on the radar and where good ideas are welcome.
Since we're talking about delegates, what are the responsibilities of a delegate at convention?
Well, delegates are expected to show up, so that's important.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
And to stick around the whole time, you know, don't take off and vacation Phoenix. You'll probably die out there anyway. You want to stay in the air conditioning. Yeah. The other thing is to be engaged and informed about the convention material. So to engage with the workbook, to engage with today's business, which is something we'll spend more time, I think, another coffee hour probably talking about, but the cooked down version of all the overtures that have come in and reports, that's the resolutions that Synod will actually be considering in the main, to engage with those things before the convention, to be informed, to engage with their circuits, congregations in their circuits, and to see what the issues are that should be represented there. And then to come and engage, you know, to speak if that's your thing at the microphone, to go to floor committee hearings, which are where the sausage really is made, an exciting part of the process, and a much more, I will say, a much easier, less threatening way than speaking in front of 1,500 people. More folks are comfortable speaking in those when they come to visit with the floor committee and often have very good input right before the convention. So to engage in those things, and then after the convention, to come home and not just be done, but to engage with the circuit again, share what the convention has done, share the concerns for the 3 years to come, and hopefully energize folks to participate in their Synod and district in governing them and making them do the things that are really going to be helpful to each one of our congregations.
Okay, so that's what the delegates do. What do you get to do at Synod Convention?
I'm a busy guy. It's pretty intense leading up to convention, helping the floor committees get things ready, helping the nominations and elections committee get prepared so that everything goes off smoothly and no mistakes are made in areas that are kind of complicated. But then during the convention, I'm up there taking the minutes and sometimes answering questions. I try to do that as little as possible, but it happens. Dealing with new business that's coming in, resolutions, meeting with the Commission on Constitutional Matters to evaluate things, handbook, issues of wording with bylaw changes. And then every night when the convention is over and everybody goes to dinner, I go off to my secret hiding place and do the minutes and other reports, get everything ready for the today's business to be published that night for the delegates to receive on their tables the next morning. Or if they're real nerds, they can download it that evening when we're done with it between 11:30 and 1 in the morning. So it's short nights. Thankfully, the convention doesn't go on for more than a week, or I probably wouldn't make it. But
so if you were to use one word to describe your brain mode when you're in the actual convention hall, you said writing that you're taking notes, right? You're writing minutes then. What's the brain mode?
It's a game of continual focus and the ability to shift focus from what's going on the floor to questions that are coming in or issues that need to be addressed. It is a test of mental acuity, I will say.
I would imagine. All right, so favorite fun fact about LCMS convention, one or two if you have some fun facts. First of all, which convention is this for you? How many conventions have you participated in?
I came on as secretary in 2016. We had the expansion year in there for COVID, the Jubilee year. So I've been at this for a decade at 26. I was at 23, also at the 13 convention before that, pretty active as a member of the Commission on Constitutional Matters there as well. So, but that was my first one. So it's been quite a run.
All right. So favorite fun fact about LCMS convention.
Oh, goodness. I've never really thought of the convention in terms of fun. Fun facts. Well, one thing that is kind of interesting is the convention has stayed remarkably the same size in terms of delegates for a very long time, even though our number of confirmed members has kind of shrunk. And that's something that the task force is kind of looking at right now, whether we want to stay a convention of about 1,500, or this year it might be closer to 1,300, just as things have shaken out, voting and advisory delegates and representatives. Or if a smaller size might actually allow for more choice of venues, more engagement, maybe a more kind of intimate setting where more conversation could take place. So those things are kind of on the table. But it's kind of interesting that the size we presently have is one that we've just kind of settled on over decades of change and for whatever reason kind of stuck with. It's kind of surprising to people, I think.
Where can we keep up on what's going on with LCMS convention in 2026?
Yeah, so I mentioned those couple of web pages, the lcms.org/nominate. That will tell you for all these non-president, vice president offices, everything you need to know to get involved in that process. The other is that lcms.org/convention/governance. And that will get you into this whole pile of stuff. The timeline of the present convention, there's a kind of a button for that there if you go down a little bit on the page. The triennium processes, that gets you into a kind of timeline and description of the specific instructions for everything that's going on. And then there are pages and pages of information in great depth on how to participate in all these things, some of the history of it, and where to find other resources to answer questions or dig deeper if you want to get further involved. So that'll take you down a rabbit trail that'll last the whole afternoon if you're so inclined.
Love it.
Our guest today, the Reverend Dr. John Sias, Secretary of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, as we look forward to the next LCMS convention in 2026. Thanks so much for being our guest today.
Hey, it's a real pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.